Good evening, everyone. I call the October 30th meeting of the Legislative Commission on Pensions and Retirement to order. A quorum is not present. However, no official action will be taken at this meeting. The goal of the meeting here today is to hear from members of the public on the topics of pension and retirement benefits for Minnesota's public employees and the work of the commission. We have a handout available about what pensions and retirement legislation was passed during the 2023 legislative session. I greatly appreciate all of you being here in attendance. This is a really great showing. Well, I wonder if I can make this day okay. This is a really great showing, and this is really a signal that how important pensions is. And so thank you all for being here and taking time out. I know that there are many people who have evening things that they deal with families. There are educators here who their day doesn't always end after the school day is over. And so I appreciate that you all have made this a better priority and are here today. I will now, before we start, invite our members to shortly introduce themselves before we hear from testifiers. And so if we could just start maybe down at the end here with Representative Nadeau, if you could just introduce yourself so that everyone knows who's here today.
Good evening, I'm Danny Nadeau. I represent Rogers, Dayton, and Champlin, which is in the northern part of Hennepin County. I want to thank you all for being here. Many of you reached out to me and taught me a lot about teacher pensions, and I appreciate that.
Hi everyone, my name is Representative Ethan Shaw. I represent the East Metro area of Woodbury, which is east of St. Paul. I'm second time I've been here to live, and I'm happy to see all of you here to greet us.
I'm Representative Kayla Berg. I represent a good portion of Burnsville, and having spent the last 20 years in the labor movement, I'm really pleased to see you all here fighting for your important issues.
Hello everyone, I'm Senator Sandy Pappas from St. Paul, a longtime member of the Pension Commission, former chair, vice chair, secretary, everything. And I'm delighted to see former Representative Mary Murphy here in the front row. I served with her for many years.
I'm Senator Judy Sieberger. I represent District 41, which are the communities of Lake Elmo, Afton, the Lakeland communities, Cottage Grove, and Hastings. This is my first year on the Pensions Commission. And I'm delighted to be here, and I'm also delighted to see my friend and former college roommate, Cheryl, in attendance here, speaking up for the teachers.
Hi, everybody. I'm State Senator Jen McEwen. I represent Duluth. I am not on the Pensions Commission, but I'm here today to listen and to learn with all of you and to find out the best ways to advocate for all of you in the area of pensions. So,
thank you. And I'm State Representative Kaliher. I am the chair of the commission. And as I said earlier, I'm really glad to be here with all of you today. I do just want to make sure that we also introduce our staff over at the side here. We have Sean Kelly, who is our new deputy director of the LCPR. And then we have Nick Stuma-Langer, who is the CA, who has done a phenomenal job in ensuring that we don't lose any issues that are heard in our pension commissions or in any time we have hearings. And so just thank you to our staff for really working hard and putting this together. And then also, I just want to thank that there, you know, this couldn't have happened without our partners. And I just wanted to acknowledge Lindy with Edmund, who really helped us put this together. Lindy, you wave so people know who you are. And there aren't many other people here today that are also part of ensuring that there's always dialogue between the commission and our community members. And so, I know if I don't call you by name, it's not because of the not remembering who you are, but it's that there's a lot of people. And so, I just want to make sure that I don't forget anyone by not naming names. And then we'll what I'll do is I'll give a little bit of just kind of housekeeping before we have Representative Olson introduce herself when she gets situated. But we are going to be, there are a lot of people here today, and I know that initially for those who registered ahead of time, signed up ahead of time to speak, we said that you would have 3 minutes, but to ensure that we actually get to hear as many people as we can, we are asking that you keep your remarks to 2.5 minutes. And then when you do come up, just make sure to speak that there. If you notice that the mic at the little testifier's table there is red, you have to press the button in the middle so that we can hear you, and it'll turn green once you press it. And then if you have signed up ahead of time to testify, please sign in after you testify. And what I'll do is I'll call three people at a time so that you can come take a seat. This is sort of just cut down on our movement time to get people up right away to speak. So you could just call your neighbors, come up and sit at the table where there's three chairs there. Just come up and sit there and be ready to give your remarks. And then we do have Deputy Director Sean Kelly will be keeping the line, so when you hear the buzzer go off, please try to wrap up your comments and so that we can make sure that we can hear as many people as possible. And then I would say that the last thing is I know there are people who might not have signed up ahead of time, and if we will do our best to get through all of the people who signed up ahead of time, and if we have availability, and we will call you by those who maybe just came today and wanted to share some remarks. And then if we don't get to you, please always feel free to write what it is that you're going to say and send it to us. Our staff does an amazing job of ensuring that all of the members get copies of remarks so that we always know what you all are thinking. And so know that that is always an option as well. And with that, I'm going to have Representative Olson introduce herself really quick, as we already all did, and then we can get into having you all start to come up and speak to us.
Good evening. I'm Representative Liz Olson. I represent the central and west parts of Duluth. I'm also not on the pensions committee, but happy to be here. And I have my daughter Florence, who is a student, so thank you, teachers.
Thank you. And so, what I want you all to know today, too, before we start, is that I want to just sort of set the stage in that this is our chance to hear from you. So if we are not responding, I have asked the commission and our members here to actually just do a lot of listening. And we are taking notes. We are ensuring that we take back what you all hear, because our goal is to ensure that we get feedback from all of you to sort of help inform what we might be doing when we get back into session in February. And so know that if we're not speaking, it's because we want to make sure your voices are heard and we don't take up any time because it's limited already. So with that, what I'm going to do is call up some of our first testifiers. So the first person is Tamara. If I say your name correctly, please repeat your name when you come up to give your testimony. But Tamara Lemke, and then Seth Justice Loeffler Kemp, and Brian Rice. And so please state your name for the record, and then go ahead with your testimony.
Hi, my name is Tamara Lemke. I work for St. Louis County Sheriff's Department at the jail here in Duluth. And I'm in the programs department. So we are on the coordinated retirement plan, and we strongly believe we should be in the corrections plan. We carry a duty belt. I handcuff people. I go to codes. I resuscitate people. I do security. I do rounds. I do everything an officer does, plus other things. And I'll be 65 next year, and I think that's kind of old to be wrestling with inmates. So we believe that in the MSRS, where they just give the descriptions of what the correctional staff do, it's very title specific. I'm a program facilitator. We have program counselors, and they do the exact same thing as they do in the state prisons. And then the other thing is, across the state, in some jails, the same people that do the job I do are in the Corrections 55 plan. And for example, Aiken County, the program coordinator there is in the 55 corrections plan. And there's no rhyme or reason why some jails are and some jails aren't. I just know that corrections is a very hard career, and we get injured a lot. The mental stress that it puts on people, I really believe strongly we should all be in that 55 corrections plan. Anybody, we work 75% of our time plus with inmates. So, was that buzz?
You have 30 seconds.
Okay. Anyway, I support the teachers. I never knew all these teachers were going to be here today. And thank you very much for listening to us. Thank you.
Thank you, Tamara.
And Mary's great.
The next person is Seth Justice Loeffler. And I will ask that I know that we are very enthusiastic. We want to show support of each other, but the clapping does take some time. And so if we could just maybe hold all of our applause until the end for everybody, that would be really helpful. And just know that for those who are here not speaking, we actually wanted to hear from everyone. So this is not just a hearing for teachers and pensions. This is for everybody who's a pension in the state of Minnesota. And Seth, if you could just identify yourself for the record to begin.
Yep, push it so it's green.
Hi, my name is Seth Justice Loeffler Kemp. I serve our community as a 911 dispatcher with St. Louis County and also an executive board member to AFSCME Local 66, which serves the Arrowhead region. I'm here today asking for your consideration for enhanced pension benefits and decreased retirement age for 911 telecommunicators around the state. I started 911 dispatching 5 years ago with the city of Minneapolis before moving back here to St. Louis County. We take in the immediate traumas of our community one after the next, after the next, after the next. From fires to medicals to police involved incidents, we are the ones that hold the glue together. We're often unseen, but just because we are invisible does not mean we should be treated that way and we should have greater dignity in our work and how we're treated. We are with our communities in every sort of crisis you could imagine, and worse. And when I was at Minneapolis, there were times when we didn't have enough officers to be sending out to our emergencies, and officers not responding to certain neighborhoods. But it was still us who was taking in those traumas because we don't get to choose who we respond to or not. Everything from a plane going through a house last year here in Barry Murphy's house, to children not breathing, to folks in domestics, anything you could imagine. So my request is, again, that consideration, and I would urge you to have Minnesota be a leader in this. Federally, 911 dispatchers are unfortunately classified as clerical workers, which I find offensive to our profession. There's police, fire, EMS, and dispatch. We are that fourth first responder, the first responder. Many would say the most critical role in making sure all that happens effectively and efficiently and with cohesion altogether. I'm going to yield the rest of my time to Ryan Stauber, who is a coworker of mine, and we'll have further context on where we're at and where we'd like to go.
I've been a dispatcher for 15 and a half years. All I can say is I ask you guys to take a look at what the working group sent you back in 2022. And if you'd like to see why we need enhanced retirement benefits, come sit with me anytime. 30 minutes, you'll see.
Can I just ask that you sign in to us? Thank you. Next up is Brian Rice and then Michael Nelson, if you could both be ready. You can come up and sit up at the table.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Brian Rice. I'm here today speaking on behalf of the Minnesota Professional Firefighters. Pete Johnson, will you stand at this side? Pete isn't going to testify, but he's a former head of the Union for Duluth Fire, and also the Minnesota Police Fraternal Association. That's an organization of about 1,000 retired police officers, their surviving spouses from all around the state, including we just got about a half a dozen from Duluth. So if they're here today, thanks for joining our group. Three quick issues. Well, several things. First, thank you, Madam Chair, for everything that, and the Pension Commission that you did last year. It was really historic to get that much money, the most ever, the earliest ever, where you took action. I mean, for those who are in the room, Chair Herr, Senator Pappas, Senator Frentz, the whole commission really did tremendous, tremendous work. I've been following this for 40 years. And thank you, thank you, thank you. There's more to do. Our points on police and fire is the COLA. I mean, we've seen the Social Security increases at 7-8%. Police and fire are locked, retirees are locked into 1% a year. It's wholly, wholly inadequate. Last year you did something about it. There is some relief coming in the form of one-time money next March, but it's just not enough. And the Pension Commission did a study after the 2018 bill, and you identified that the pensions for everyone are eroding. And so it's a big number, but you really, really need to do that. The second issue is for those police and fire members who retire, unlike all the other employees, they have to wait 3 years to get any COLA adjustment. So if you retired in the middle of the pandemic, before inflation hit, you've been at zero, and inflation has now gone up 20% since 2020. Your pension's been wiped out for a lot of these people. It's punitive. It needs to be fixed. That both our groups will be asking firmly of Mr. Anderson and Paraport to fix those two problems. And our COLA suggestion is a minimum of take it from 1% to at least 2%. Even that won't address it, but that's our minimum ask for the legislature. And I'll add a third item, and this is some excellent work the Pension Commission staff did. I don't know, Nick, if I can give this to you or put it in the record. I'll leave copies. A year ago, earlier this year, or maybe it was 2 years ago, the Pension Commission staff did a study on all the special state appropriation aids that are given to the pension plans to help make up these unfunded liabilities. I respectfully ask you, Madam Chair, study the issue, make these permanent. Minnesota's done pensions on the cheap. We're 46th in the nation on public spending per capita, state and local government. We've done it on the cheap too long. This is one measure you can do to lock these fundings in. It's not just police and fire, it's corrections, it's teachers, it's state patrol, it's judges, it's everything. We really need a comprehensive approach to pensions. This would not cost you anything in a target, one bit. It would really help. Mary Murphy was here today, really authored a lot of these aids, and she always just found enough to get might buy and do. You need a target, and you should first ask, which won't cost you a dollar, make these aids permanent. And I'll leave this with Nick. The commission staff did great research on. Thank you for going on the road and bringing all these people in. I've been doing pensions for 41 years. Nobody's done this for 20 years, so thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Rice. Okay, up next is Michael Nelson, and Deb will be Denise Spatt, correct? And then Bridget Peterson.
Good evening. Michael Nelson. I am a current retiree after 39 years working for the state of Minnesota, primarily Secretary of State's office. I'm also a recipient of an MSRS pension since 2017. I'm currently the Vice President of AFSCME Minnesota Chapter 5 Retirees United, with 4,000 active members statewide, and advocating for thousands more who receive MSRS and PERA pensions. And I think our advocacy needs are very similar to what you're going to hear from the teachers later. I have family members who are teachers, and I hear the same thing that I hear from our members. Going back to the LCPR study from December of 2019, there were two things that really stood out for retirees. One was a statement that the primary purpose of Minnesota's post-retirement adjustments is to mitigate the loss of purchasing power of retirement benefits due to inflation. The second point was that retirement benefits should be increased during the period of retirement to offset the impact of economic inflation over time to maintain a retirement benefit that was adequate at the time of retirement. Since the 2018 pension deal, unanticipated COVID and post-COVID inflation has caused significant erosion of purchasing power for our pensions, and little real action has been taken to mitigate those losses in purchasing power, in spite of the stated intentions listed previously, to offset the loss of a significant portion of the purchasing power of the pensions to current retirees. Calculations by various parties have pegged that loss at 12 to 18% since just 2018. Whether one uses a lower or higher figure, this is a significant loss of value in the pensions, and little was done in the last legislative session to narrow that loss. As a current recipient of an MSRS pension and a member of an organization representing both MSRS and PERA employees, we see this lack of an equitable COLA increase with a degree of alarm, since it greatly affects our current pension value that will extend far into the future. We would request that the pension plans, the legislature, and the administration jointly agree to increase the appropriation for the pension plans to include new dollars from the anticipated budget surplus to provide for one, an adjustment to bring the current pension value closer to the value to maintain the value at the time of retirement, and two, continuing new dollars added to the pension system to maintain the value into the future. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Nussler. Next is Denise Stout. Please state your name for the record in case I said it wrong and you your testimony.
Good evening, everyone. My name is Denise Speck. I'm an elementary teacher from the Centennial School District, serving as president of Education Minnesota, the state's largest union. A pension is a promise. When public pensions were put into place, they were a promise to essential middle-class workers that do the work that help all of us, like teaching, fighting fires, and more, and retire with security and dignity. As time went on, public pensions became a check on exploding corporate power. Our schools and public systems were able to stay competitive with big corporate employers by offering a secure retirement as a part of an employee's compensation package. There was a time when teachers earned less in take-home pay, but the benefits of good health care and retirement made up for it. Well, those days are long gone. Educators in Minnesota earn 28% less than comparable professions, according to a study done by the Economic Policy Institute released in September. There is no affordable health care anywhere. And pension benefits that existed for a group of educators expired. And now we have a retirement system that is simply uncompetitive due to enormous penalties. The times have most certainly changed. Corporate power and greed has exploded, while at the same time, our public systems have suffered from chronic disinvestment. Teaching has gotten far more difficult due to expanding mandates, unmanageable class sizes, and a lack of support or resources to do the job. So it is absolutely no wonder, then, that our two-tier pension system is pushing mid-career educators out of the profession. Good teachers who have taught for 20 years have to decide right now if they should stay or if they should flee to a higher paying private sector job now so they can establish themselves in a second career before retirement. The legislature has an opportunity to build on the pension improvements made last year and keep the broad middle class promise that will attract the next generation of great educators and retain this one. We believe in checking corporate power, in building a broad and secure middle class, and pensions are a promise to do just that. I encourage the LCPR to take further steps to improve educator pensions this year. Thank you.
Thank you. Next up is Bridget Peterson, and on deck is Caitlin Effo, and then after that will be Kim Hannon. Please state your name for the record and begin, Jessica.
My name is Bridget Peterson. And I just want to say thank you, everybody, for being here today to listen to the workers that you represent. I've worked as a teacher and media specialist in Minnesota for 32 years. I knew at a young age that I wanted to be a teacher, and I am so fortunate to have worked almost my entire career in the school district I grew up in, Esko Public Schools. I love my job, fostering the love of reading, instilling the importance of innovative and critical thinking, and preparing students to enter the workforce as productive citizens and lifelong learners. I believe, as many here also believe, that Minnesota's hard-working educators deserve improvements in their Tier 2 pension plan. When I entered college in 1988, I remember the professor in my intro to education class listing robust pensions as one of the pros to offset the negatives in a career in education. Unaware to me, before I graduated, that had all changed. I still remember the devastation I felt when my former third grade teacher told me that there is no warm rule of 90 for me. I have the rule of 108. Without the rule of 90, Minnesota educators have to work past when they're ready to retire or forfeit a significant amount of their pension. These steep penalties, TRA refers to them as discounts, are reduction factors that need to be lowered in order to provide a plan for educators that's competitive with neighboring states and encourages people to enter the career. I just have one question today and was hoping that in the upcoming session, will you all take the driver's seat on this issue and work with all the parties involved? Leadership at the Capitol, TRA, and us, the Tier 2 educators, to advocate for a budget target that allows enough for pension improvements, and will you advocate and vote for a bill that lowers penalties for Tier 2 educators? Thank you.
Thank you. And my apologies, I'm going to switch up the order a little bit because we do have a testifier who needs to leave. So Brian Cole, if you could be up next, and then we'll go to Caitlin and then Kim.
Thank you for taking testimony this afternoon and for coming up. My name is Brian Cole. I'm a career educator from Moorhead, Minnesota, my 30th year of teaching. We have an education problem in Minnesota that's not being addressed. It is an educator pension problem. In our five-state area, Wisconsin, Iowa, and the Dakotas, Minnesota sits a distant fifth when it comes to teacher pension benefits. That statistic deflates our spirit, and it is hard to serve when our spirit is empty. As a teacher and coach, each day in my classroom, I have a game plan. A plan to have my students make progress to move them closer to their goal, the goal line. A phrase I often use is, we're not looking for a touchdown, we're looking for a first down. It's been a long time since teacher pensions in Minnesota have had a first down, to say nothing of a touchdown at the goal line. In fact, we've gone backwards. We've had losses in the sunsetting of the rule of 90. We encourage large penalties, not discounts. We encourage large penalties when we don't hit normal retirement age. And to carry my football analogy, one more sentence, if you don't mind. Upon further review, now is the time to make pension improvements for Minnesota teachers. This will help in the retention and the recruitment of educators in Minnesota. Senators and representatives, thank you for coming to Duluth. Thank you for coming to Northern Minnesota, for your time in helping to create a dignified retirement for educators in Minnesota.
Thank you. Caitlin, please identify yourself for the record and begin.
Hello. Thank you everyone for coming here today. I'm Caitlin Afta. I'm an aspiring educator and in my senior year at University of Minnesota Duluth. I'm the Edmund Aspiring Educator President, serving over 2,500 college students who are aspiring educators. I'm grateful to see all the educators here today to raise their voices on what they need, a respectable and equitable pension. I know I'm entering an extremely challenging and rewarding profession, and my classmates and I know that most teachers leave the profession within 5 years. I believe to prevent our educators from leaving is to offer them a reliable and supportive pension that allows them to retire when they are ready without losing a significant amount in penalties. That would help us stay in the profession along with better professional pay, reduced health care costs. But what do I know about retirement? I mean, I'm only 21. I'm far from that age, but I am scared. As a future educator, I've already started a Roth IRA as a 21-year-old because I know that pensions are not good enough for me in my future. I know that workers have fought for pensions for decades, and I know that it's been a hard fight, a well-deserved benefit for a life working in necessary, hard jobs, and I know that many teachers have accepted low salaries over the years because they thought that they would be taken care of afterwards in retirement. We are a union state. We are an education state, and it is time we see a state that invests in workers' pensions so that we can lower our penalties and have a more equal pension for all educators that came before us and for the ones that will follow after us. So here's my question for you here today. Will you support better pay, respectable pensions, and better health care for all educators in the past and for the future? Thank you.
Thank you. Up next is Melissa, is Kim Cannon, and then the following with Melissa Larson, and then Betty Green. So again, if you could just come up to sit at the table. And if you have testified, you have not signed in, please make sure that you sign in. Let's make sure everybody gets that. And then if you are ready, please identify yourself for the record if you can.
Good evening, Pension Committee. My name is Kim Hannon. I'm a teacher in the Osseo School District. I'm on the Education Minnesota Pension Advisory Committee. And looking at the future in front of me, hoping to retire in 5 to 7 years, and learning an overwhelming amount of information about all the things that have been occurring in our system, I want to thank you for your service and commitment to teachers and all the other groups that you represent. I just want to say quickly, thank you again for the work that you do, but please, please, please listen to the comments that other people have made. I don't have much to say except everybody has said all the things that I want to say. Everybody is greatly concerned about their pensions. All the people that I work with in my school, they look at me, what can you tell me that I have to look forward to? People are very, very concerned. I just, please, please think of all those people and think of our young people who are going to school to be teachers. When I talk to them, what's a pension? They don't even know. But it was something that was a benefit, that was a great honor to receive. And we want to bring that back to our state and make education a place where people are proud to be educators, to teach and retire. Thank you.
Thank you. Melissa Larson. And also for those who, if you could share your pronouns that way, I always try to use people's official titles, but there's often aren't official titles here, and so I just want to make sure that I address you appropriately. So if you want to go ahead and say your name and also your pronouns, that would be really helpful. Thank you.
My name is Melissa Larson. I'm also an aspiring educator. My pronouns are she, her. And I wanted to start off by thanking everyone for coming tonight. I'm at my third year at UMD. So 1 more year left to graduate, which is exciting. But I'm here to stand in solidarity with my union as we speak for the investment of this important profession and how much we deserve from the state. I want to be a teacher to care for and support the next generation. We know that we have a terrible teacher shortage in Minnesota, and I know that if I teach in Minnesota, I'll have to work in understaffed schools with professional educators who are burning out faster than ever. College students studying to be educators, we do consider the benefits, like pensions, when deciding where to build our career. My classmates and I would be more likely to stay and teach in Minnesota if we were offered salaries and pensions that were competitive among the surrounding states. My question for you all is, what will you do to turn the tides and address the educator shortage that is hurting our students, our educators, and our schools?
Thank you so much. Up next is Betty Green, and then Bob Lane.
My name is Betty Green. I use she, her pronouns. I'm a retiree in both the NSRS and TRA pension systems. I want to start by thanking the commission for airing your commission meetings live online, as well as recording them to watch later. I have found that very helpful, having watched every 2023 meeting. I also appreciate having this meeting in Duluth, so we can more easily provide some input. I'm quite concerned about the limited cost of living increases for NSRS and TRA retirees. When those changes were made in 2018, the year I retired, a huge increase in inflation was not anticipated. I appreciate there will be a one-time extra increase early in 2024, but retirees have really been hurt financially in the last few years. The purpose of a post-retirement adjustment, COLA, is to mitigate the loss of purchasing power due to inflation, but no long-term changes have been made. Just the one-time payment coming up. Please find a way to better support retirees who faithfully worked for many years. I'm also concerned about the changes that have made early retirement more difficult for current employees. I was lucky enough to retire under the Rule of 90. Teaching especially has become a challenging profession, and if we make retirement too difficult for teachers, fewer people will even consider going into the profession. And we need them. Please do whatever you can to make positive changes to the Minnesota pension systems so they're both sustainable and properly support retirees. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Green. Next is Bob Lane, and after Bob will be Carl Kaufman.
Can you hear me?
Hey, my name is Robert Lane. I came down from Gwinnett today. My pronoun is coach. I've spoken, or at least emailed all of you, and I've listened to all the testimony here, and I had a nice little speech, but I'm 57. I'll be 58 here very soon. I have an 8-year-old granddaughter. I have a daughter who's a teacher, an English teacher down in the Twin Cities. I want to spend time with them. And as so many of these wonderful people have said, I was lucky enough, I had great teachers. So most of them are retired now. If they're not, God bless them. The penalties that we look at, I'm missed Rule of 90 very shortly. I'm not an early teacher. I was 28 when I got in. Our last Rule of 90 teacher retired last year. He's 1 year older than I am. If I retire at his age, I will lose over 50% of my pension. And that's the thing that hurts. As I said already, you look at our 5-state area, we are far and way last. This is concerning. I plan to go as soon as possible so I can spend time with my granddaughter and my children. And it's up to you folks. And I realize that the problems that we have happened a long time ago. But we have to, sooner or later, come to the conclusion that we have to do something. Thank you.
Thank you, Coach. Up next is Carl Coffin, and after Carl, we speak.
Test. Okay, that works. Welcome to Duluth and the 218 up here. I believe my story illustrates why Minnesota's Tier 2 pension system is faulty. I was hired after the 1989 July 1st date. I was already working in 1993 when virtually every single one of my colleagues was granted Rule of 90, and I was left behind. Then, when I was in 2013, when I was in my 23rd or 24th year of teaching, drastic changes happened to the pension system. The conditions that I was agreed to and worked for over 20 years in were thrown out the window. Now, if you retire before age 62 as a Tier 2 teacher in Minnesota, for virtually any reason, your pension is destroyed. Promise of a pension, gone, stripped away. Retire with dignity? No way. I retired at age 60 with 30 years of experience during the height of the pandemic because even though I look fabulous, I have a cardiomyopathy, and sometimes I forget, but when I get my chronic heart failure newsletter every quarter, it's a kick to remember. But it just wasn't worth it for me to go back into my classroom face-to-face for a third year of COVID teaching. With lots of safeguards being out the window. You know, what was my reward for 30 years of award-winning service? If you want to address me by my pronoun, you can call me former Teacher of the Year semifinalist, former Forest Educator of the Year in Minnesota, former Minnesota Environmental Educator of the Year, former University of Minnesota Outstanding Science Teacher Award winner, and blah, blah, blah. That's what I get for that. I got my pension reduced, and it's not reduced, it's penalized 42%. That puts it below Social Security and near poverty wages. That is not, one thing you may not know from TRA, it's in every financial thing, that in 2013 they removed fare reductions, and if you're below age 62, and inserted non-actuarial equivalency reductions. That's where these extreme penalties come from. They're not actuarial. Basically what happened is they stripped away my entire employer contribution that I earned. And then, so I'm encouraging the committee to work hard to, and this is the reason we're here for pension reform. None of these people want this to happen to them. And to be left out of any reform efforts for us few retired Tier 2 people, it's unconscionable. And the union should know that.
Thank you, Teacher of the Year Kaufman. Appreciate it. Next up is Steve Klaus, and then after that will be Blaine Novak.
Hello.
move that sign-in sheet to the side, and maybe then people can sign out, and then Ms. Kestenbach could begin zooming out. Thank you. Please identify yourself and begin.
Good evening. My name is Steve Klaus, and it's AKA Steve Stenson. Stenson was the first aircraft that I had, so that's why I kind of got a nickname, Steve Stenson. I've been teaching career and technical education classes for the past 32 years, of which 29 were in Minnesota. I'm here representing the dedicated, hardworking teachers and educators of Minnesota, especially the Iron Range. I live in Ely. I drive back and forth to Nashua, Kiwa, an hour 45 every day to educate these children. I want to address the penalties that are imposed on the Tier 2 non-rule educators associated with early retirement compared to the Tier 1 educators who qualified for that rule of 90. When I'm 59 and a half years old, I'm going to have 30 and a half years of service credits in Minnesota. If I retire then, I'm still going to have a 49% penalty, while the Tier 1 teacher is going to have zero. The TRA and the legislation has set a system to force teachers to stay until they're at least 66 or 65 as of 2025 to receive that full unpenalized pension. This would be a 44-year teaching career for me. This would be my rule of 109. A lot of us have heard some of the statements that, it's nice to have a pension. Well, Tier 2 teachers, we pay for that pension. I fund that pension. 84% of it, I fund that. So it's nothing that's given to me. The employer, they're doing about 8.7, which only 1.66% of that's going towards my Tier 2 pension. The rest of it's going to goes to pay and fund the Tier 2 past liabilities. One thing about the employer contribution, they label that employer as a benefit when I do my W-2 filings, but it's actually credited and deposited into the TRA general fund. This is why I don't see this benefit on my TRA annual statement. If I decide to pull those funds out and don't want to take a retirement or a payout, they keep that. When I die, they keep that. Is that a true benefit? I'll let you decide that. Also, during the negotiation contracts, our school districts cost that benefit against our total package. I just want to say that we need to reduce the penalties, and I'd like for us to create a career rule for Tier 2 educators. Now, I understand that the governor, they set the targets, but I encourage the LCPR board to ask the governor to increase these targets so all Minnesotans and Minnesota educators can have the opportunity to retire with grace and dignity. Thank you for your time. Thank you for coming up.
Thank you. Next is Blaine Novak, and after Blaine will be Christy Strubler.
Good evening. I'm Blaine Novak. I'm the superintendent at New York Mills, and we prepared a PowerPoint for you. Share out a handout, and Mike is here with me as well at PowerPoint.
Thank you. I'm Mike Malmberg, superintendent of Pillager Public Schools.
And we do have your handout here.
Thank you. Chair Herb, members of the commission, thank you so much for being intentional while coming and listening to our concerns dealing with pensions. We recognize that in your role, you are looking at all public pensions, but our comments today will be addressed around educator pensions. And a couple of concerns that we bring forth, the current educators are paying the highest contributions in the history of TRA pensions, combined with historically the largest penalties for early retirement. Unlike other states, there is no unpenalized early retirement threshold for career educators. Also, as Steve mentioned, current educators are paying for well over 80% of their own TRA pension benefit, according to the actual TRA numbers. The harsh discounts or penalties are taking away the money that the employee has contributed on the earnings on that money.
The reasons we need pension reform for educators, we need to attract future career candidates, people entering the workforce later in life, and professionals who may change careers after they've started in a different occupation. We have to avoid discounts or penalties for those that choose to stay home for childcare. We have a huge shortage of childcare. We see a lot of that as superintendents in our school districts of people leaving the profession, and hopefully we can get them back.
And we have heard that we need to work toward a fair pension or improving the pension system. But we can't slow walk this. We need to act now and find a solution. Waiting does not help the current members who are caught in the middle, and they don't have a voice at the table. We are losing potential educators every day, every week, every month, every year that we are not active doing something about this. We are seeing the largest reductions of people entering public service, education included, at a post-secondary institution across our state at a time when we need to attract even more educators to the field of public service. And finally, Minnesota cannot afford to lose employees to neighboring states with better benefits and better pensions. Just a couple ideas that we think would be helpful if we were to address. Number one, make Minnesota teacher pension, make Minnesota teacher retirement age competitive with other states. Reduce the discounts. They are penalizing. Reduce the discounts. And three, create an early retirement threshold for career educators. Reward those that spend in education or a career in education.
Pension reform that addresses the issues you've heard. I'm sure many of you have had different examples from different groups. Whatever those groups or whatever those examples would be, they need to make those issues that we've addressed go away for our public employees. Discounts, there may be some, but the ones that we are paying now are extremely high for our employees. Whatever's done, we need to reward career educators and those that enter career later in life, and all public employees. We'd like to thank you for coming here today. In closing statement, we, as superintendents, we don't have all the answers, but we hear from our people that work for us the issues that they have. And we need to do whatever we can to retain, recruit, and bring new people into our profession and our field. Thank you for coming here, and thank you for listening to our concerns.
Christy Strudler, and after Christy, Angela Paulson. Good evening. My name is Christy Strudler. My pronouns are she, her. I'm a high school teacher at Esco Public Schools and a member of the Esco Education Association. This is my 21st year as a teacher, all of which have been in Esco, Minnesota. There are many altruistic reasons that I became a teacher and many reasons that I remain in the teaching profession. People often speak of this profession as a calling. I'm one of those people. As a teacher, I am privileged to be instrumental in guiding our nation's children to adulthood. I am proud that teachers were the hands that helped to hold up children, students, and families during the COVID-19 pandemic. I am joyful to observe every day the growth, resilience, hope, and energy that our young people bring to the world and will carry into their futures. As much as I love teaching, it is not something that a person can do forever. And I knew that going into the profession. The security offered to teachers in retirement was a chance for me to do what I love and focus on children and families while ensuring that I would be taken care of after my career had ended. I envisioned working until 60 and collecting the full pension that I earned from serving the public for 35 years. After the rule of 90 was taken away and the staggering penalties for retiring before 67 were implemented, 7 years were added to my career. That change had me facing a 42-year career and a retirement date of 2045. While the new NRA of 65 is a change in the right direction, it is not enough. Anyone who has given 30 to 35 years to a career has earned the right to retire with a full pension. I strongly urge you to continue to work to find the solution that will fulfill this promise. This is what Minnesota teachers need, what they deserve, what they have paid for, and what they have earned. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Ms. Strudler. Next is Angela Paulson, and after Angela, Jim Olson.
My name is Angela Paulson. I am a teacher at Esco Public Schools and also the vice president of the Esco Education Association. Pension plans were designed as a tool to attract skilled workers and get them to stay with that same employer until retirement, Pensions are an especially important tool for public employers since they cannot often pay salary competitive to a private company. When Rule of 90 was ended on July 1st, 1989, the legislature did so for the following reasons. Back then, it was not an issue needing prompt attention due to the youth of the teachers at that time. At that point, retirement was a long way off for those new teachers. Now that same youth is approaching retirement and greatly concerned. Back then, the cost necessary to increase contributions to cover Rule of 90 was pushed down the road. The old whomever comes next will surely find the money. Now, the whomever, whether you like it or not, is you. Back then, it was thought that the next generation was too small to fill teaching positions. So the solution was to commit them to the workforce for a longer period. Now, without pension reform, it will be even more difficult to attract those to teaching in Minnesota in the first place. The industry standard for full benefit retirement age for teachers in the U.S. is just under 59 years. Minnesota, coming up, will be 65 years. North Dakota is 6 years earlier. Wisconsin and Iowa are both a full decade earlier. I personally have been teaching for 26 years and substitute taught prior to that. I teach language arts and science to two groups of 28 kids for a total of 56 students. Under our current plan, I must teach another 16 years to reach full retirement age, and I will have taught 42 years at that point. While 42 years of service sounds impressive, I'm not sure I'll be able to sustain the energy level required to meet the needs of those today's students. I am the daughter of teachers, a granddaughter of a teacher, and the niece of a teacher. In my family, the teaching profession is well respected. Please show us that our elected and appointed leaders feel the same way and offer us a respectful retirement. Please lower the penalties for an earlier retirement. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Olson. Next is Jim Olson, and after Jim will be Lonnie Dorsey.
Jim Olson, Duluth teacher, he, him. Hello, LCPR members. First and foremost, I would like to thank you for spending your time to hear our stories and use what you learn from us to enact meaningful pension reform for Tier 2 educators. My name is Jim Olson, and I've been teaching for 27 years. I've been following my personal pension benefits since I was 24. I've continued to see the legislative changes decrease my benefit. I made personal financial adjustments so I'd be able to retire when the time was right. Unfortunately, many of my colleagues were not aware of the legislative changes that have decimated their own pensions. They were not aware that for 15 of the 20 years between 1981 and 2000, the COLAs given to retired educators was higher than the rate of inflation. And because it was never clawed back, the exponential benefit growth created an unfunded liability in the post-retirement fund. They were not aware that that unfunded liability hit a breaking point when the housing market collapsed in 2007. With the legislature combining the active fund and the post-retirement fund to cover the $7 billion shortfall, which meant that the active teachers' contributions to TRA would need to be increased to pay for the benefits of the teachers who were already retired. They were not aware of the actual equivalence that was removed in 2013 and the penalty structure that was introduced that would reduce their pension benefits up to 65%. They were not aware that in 2018, the legislature ended deferred augmentation and that it resulted that their benefits becoming stagnant the day they left teaching, while the money that came from their own paychecks would grow. It would never come back to them. They were not aware of the increase in the employee TRA contributions that were enacted in 2023 and how it forced Minnesota teachers to pay an 89% contribution rate of our employers, which is 200% the national average. There are many more things that they were not aware of, but there are also things that they are aware of. They are aware that time is ticking and that the longer it takes to make meaningful pension reform, the more challenging it will become to enact it. They're aware that there are other important issues that draw more attention of the public eye, but the 80,000 active educators in Minnesota need this body to fulfill the promise that we were made when we signed on to be Minnesota teachers. They're aware that this board did not enact all these punitive policies that these teachers are facing. But most importantly, they're aware that working together, organizations like Education Minnesota, TRA, the LCPR can achieve the meaningful pension reform that has eluded us for over 30 years. We are not just asking for meaningful pension reform, we are begging for it. We are willing to work with the LCPR in any way needed to enact pension reform that will provide a career rule, a mid-career rule, and lower the penalties for educators between 55 and 62. My question to you is, what do you need from us to make meaningful pension reform happen this session? Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Wilson. Next is Ilani Duberstein, and Ilani is Joan Beaver.
Chair and Commission members, thank you for this opportunity to speak on behalf of REAN, the Retired Educators Association of Minnesota. I am past president and current co-chair of the Legislative Committee, along with Henry Carboni and Tim Moynihan, that cannot be here today. Some of them in the room will remember the name Madeline Hunter and Monitor and Josh. And all of you will be getting copies. I give them to Sean. I have one sentence from this part. Some housekeeping business taken on by the LCPR and ultimately the legislature has been a time-consuming process that the trustee boards of each pension system may more efficiently conduct. And we can talk more about that later. We believe that the ongoing ADC, actuarial defined contribution investments, need to be codified in Minnesota law. They should be allocated every year at the level determined by the actuaries. As the actuaries said, you have to lower the investment rate assumption, so it was done. Why don't they listen to the actuaries when the actuaries say you should be paying the ADC? Further, the funds should go directly to the pension fund systems to prevent conflicts of interest with the budgets of cities, counties, and school districts. Whole, healthy funds are worthy for retirees and a powerful incentive for recruiting and retaining vital public employees. And let's hear it for all of those people out here. Thank you very much. The legislative principles of pension policy were established to guide legislators in overseeing and structuring laws to support public employees' retirement pensions. A notable feature is that pensions must provide for adequate purchasing power during retirement. To keep up with inflation, a cost of living adjustment was instituted as the best mechanism for delivering that promise. However, it's been well documented that the promise is not being kept. Determining the annual COLA for retirees using a measure like the Consumer Price Index could be easily understood, well-respected, and non-political. Currently, PARA's general fund does that, and it needs some looking into as a possibility. Using its own COLA study from 2018, it's very evident that the COLA is inadequate. The study stated, it is unlikely that the post-retirement adjustments will fully recover retirees' loss of purchasing power, and retirees will experience an erosion of their benefits purchasing power. We propose a steady COLA at a reasonably higher rate, although low, a minimum of 2 and a max of 4 would seem a sensible thing. Thank you, Commission members, for taking this opportunity to listen to all of us on behalf of Minnesota's retired educators. We wish you wisdom in taking on the task of keeping the promise to retirees.
Thank you, Mr. President. Next is Joan Beaver, and after Joan is Maggie Temple. Please identify yourself and begin your testimony.
Madam Chair and Commissioners, my name is Joan Beaver, and my pronouns are she/her. I'm speaking on behalf of Education Minnesota Retired. You are hearing from many active teachers who very much need pension reform. However, and Education Minnesota Retired supports these changes that you're hearing about tonight. However, I'm here tonight to ask for the maintenance of the value of benefits once we are retired. An issue that is critical not only to current retirees, but to those who will retire from the day they retire. When I retired in 2010 after teaching U.S. history at Stillwater Area High School for 37 years, I believed that my retirement would be financially secure. I was thankful for the deferred compensation known as TRA, pension benefits, my tax-deferred investment savings, and the Social Security benefits I would apply for later. I live pretty frugally. My car is 8 years old. And no one was talking about inflation, so I thought I would be okay. I had experienced high inflation. Excuse me. Is my time up?
No, you can continue.
I had experienced high inflation during the late 1970s and early 80s, so I knew what it could do to the finances of retired folks living on fixed incomes. But I was assured that there would be cost of living adjustments. In 2018, the TRA fund looked unsustainable, and the LCPR put together a bill to preserve the defined benefit system we have for future retirees, reduce TRA COLAs to 1% each of the next 5 years, and then increased it up to 1.5 over a five-year time period. At that time, inflation was running about 2% annually, but we retirees supported the bill, even though the value of benefits would fall, of our benefits would fall behind, in order to preserve the defined benefit pension for future retirees. And the bill also required a study of COLAs, which commission staff completed in 2020. That study showed that teachers who were retired since 2010 have suffered huge losses in the value of TRA benefits. I urge commissioners to look at that study again, especially the graphs on pages 31 and 34. And that was before the spike in inflation rates since 2020. I would like to wrap up by saying, urging the commissioners to live up to one of its basic principles, that the value of post-retirement benefits must be maintained, and that post-retirement adjustments should be funded by the legislature and not from the pension funds themselves. Thank you for providing the opportunity for everyone here to speak about pension issues and for taking the time now to prepare before the legislative session begins. Thank you for all of your hard work to make deferred compensation system of public pensions sound.
Thank you, Ms. Up next is Maggie Temple, and after Maggie is Katie Dickerson.
Maggie Temple, my pronouns are she, her. Chair Hur and esteemed members of the LCPR committee, I appreciate this opportunity to speak. I've been a public school teacher for 30 years in the state of Minnesota, and as you know, the legislature passed a law in 1998 that separated teachers into Tier 1 and Tier 2. Unfortunately, those of us that were put into that Tier 2 category have been saddled with higher contribution rates to our retirement, extreme penalties for early retirement, and the reality of having to work a decade longer than our Tier 1 counterparts to qualify for the same defined benefit plan. Let me provide you with a personal example. I have friends just a few years older than me who were able to retire from teaching under the rule of 90 with full benefits at about the age of 57 or 58. If I want to retire at that age with 34 years in the classroom, a full career, and the same length of time my rule of 90 colleagues taught, I will pay penalties of 50%. The money that I diligently contributed out of my paycheck toward my pension for over 30 years will be slashed in half based on some arbitrary law. Imagine a teacher who dedicated her life to Minnesota families and children cannot retire with dignity in the very state where she grew up, where she has family, and where she dedicated her life's work. To reiterate what you've heard tonight, Minnesota Tier 2 educators contribute more out of their paycheck than educators in other states and their Tier 1 counterparts. Minnesota teachers are subjected to harsh penalties that make the Minnesota teacher pension system one of the worst in the nation. In fact, if I choose to retire at the age of 60, my pension ranks about 44th out of 50 states in terms of penalty reductions. Minnesota teachers teach a decade longer than their rule of 90 counterparts, their colleagues in surrounding states, and also longer than other public servants in this state. So the teachers who are here today, we're not asking for more, we're not asking for better, we're simply asking for an equitable system. So I asked during the upcoming legislative session, the LCPR advocate for a modified rule of 90 that allows for a long career rule and a mid-career rule,
and a reduction in penalties resulting in a structure that's more in line with surrounding states and Tier 1 educators. We all want what's best for Minnesota families and their children, and a competitive system that will attract and retain teachers is what Minnesota students need and deserve. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you, Ms. Temple. Next is Maggie Dickerson, and after Katie Dickerson, and after that is Joseph Rocco.
Katie Dickerson, she, her. Good evening. First, I'd like to thank you for the opportunity to speak. I would also like to thank my district union for providing me the day to attend, enabling me to give my testimony. Again, my name is Katie Dickerson. I'm a third-generation educator following in the footsteps of my mother, aunts, uncles, and grandmother. We are all strong union supporters. That family tradition has ended with me, as our daughter, who recently graduated with an elementary education degree, has made the decision not to teach. I can't say I'm disappointed in her decision. I began my teaching career right out of college in the fall of 1992 in New Hampshire, where I grew up. I moved to Minnesota in the fall of 1999 and began teaching at Hopkins, where I continue to teach today. As an educator, I knew I had missed the rule of 90, but was told our retirement would be fixed by the time it came for me to retire. As time went by, it became clear that no progress was being made to equalizing Minnesota Tier 2 pensions. Now I'm 55 years old with 28 years of experience. By the way, my 3 years teaching in New Hampshire, poof, away they went. My career award for being hired after June 30th, 1989, is that I must teach for another 10 years in order to recoup my full pension contribution. That's right, teacher pensions are funded by teachers. In fact, for the last 28 years, approximately 7% of my salary has been invested in a benefit that I can't fully retrieve unless I teach 10 years longer than my colleagues who were hired before July 1st, 1989. At age 65, I will have taught for 41 years. My age and years of service will equal 106. My rule of 90 educator friends, on the other hand, were able to retire at 56 and will have collected 10 additional years of full pension benefits. Those colleagues and I have the same training and have performed the same jobs. The only differences are a higher pay and the fact that my larger contributions are now supporting their pensions. I'm not asking for more. I'm simply asking for equal, because that is what our contribution to Minnesota's educational system has been. If I choose to leave earlier than 65, I need to draw from my pension. I'm severely penalized, and I lose money I contributed to that pension. I am asking you to please seek to understand the inequitable and unjust situation of Tier 2 educators and take some action on our recommendations for fair pension reform. Simply put, we want a pension plan that acknowledges the contributions of all educators, whether one is a career educator, a mid-career educator, or a beginning educator. And this plan should not be allowed to be altered on a whim. This can be accomplished by reducing penalties to a level similar to that of Tier 1 teachers. Doing so will do the following. It'll provide incentivization for longevity, draw educators into the field and into Minnesota from outer state, and will restore value and equity to current Minnesota educators. Governor Walz says we are a top state to live and work. This will not be the case for education if an equitable pension structure for teachers takes too long to fix. If we want to keep that status, now is the time for Minnesota to step up and resolve the teacher pension issue. No more kicking the can down the road. Our educational system can't afford it. Minnesota owes it to their students to attract and retain the highest quality educators. That is what our students deserve. Again, I thank you for your time.
Thank you, Ms. Dickerson. And our final individual who signed up prior is Joseph Rocco. If you could identify yourself and begin your...
Joseph Rocco, he, him, whosoever. I'm not going to take a lot of your time with repetition because everything I have to say has already been brought up. All I'm going to just leave you with is, well, one thought that I have is, what are we prepared to do from here? I know it's going to take a lot to rectify the situation that we have with pensions, but I know something is done this year. It's going to cost more next year. It's going to cost more the year done after that. So thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Rocco. And we do have a couple minutes to hear from two individuals who did not get a chance to sign up ahead of time. If you'd like to, can I just see a show of hands of how many people would like to speak? Because I only need a space for two. Okay.
I saw two hands go up, green shirt, asks me, and then the yes, you pointed to yourself. Yeah, come on up. Okay, there's a third. Who was the third one? It's me. So, okay, Trooper, come on up, Chief. And then please identify yourself, so because we don't have any amount of time. And then, my apologies. And if we don't get you, you can also submit written testimony too. Okay, so please go ahead and identify yourself. Very good.
Jess Langmars, she, her. I'm the Vice President of Local 1082. I work at the Minnesota Sex Offender Program in Moose Lake. I want to thank Chair Herr and the rest of the commission for coming up here, because it's an hour to get here instead of an hour and a half to get south. Thank you to all of the teachers here. And that's really messed up that your pensions are that bad. It is. I have to acknowledge it. But I'm here today on behalf of the food service workers at the Minnesota Sex Offender Program. They were left out of the bill that codified us into the corrections retirement plan. They work 100% of their time with repeat violent sex offenders every single day. They have butcher knives that are attached to, like, we have holes drilled in the tables with a butcher knife and a cable that's attached to it to keep them safe in there, and hopefully nobody goes off. They are working around an industrial giant kitchen that has air fryers. It has, I'm a little nervous. There's a lot of dangerous equipment inside this facility. I am one of the security counselors that will go in and provide security coverage and sign out sharps for our kitchen workers. It is the food service workers, the cooks, and the, I'll get the rest of the names to you guys later on. Senator Pappas, I know that my local has been in contact with you last year about some of this. We have already done a study on their, a job study to clarify all of this. We've done a lot of work, so that's where we're at, and I'm just here to bring this forward again, that our food service workers work 100% of the time, just like I do, and they deserve to be in the corrections retirement plan. So thank you all for your time.
Thank you for your testimony.
Hello, my name is Aaron Salmola, and I'm a 28-year teacher for Duluth, Minnesota. And I want to thank all of you first for serving and representing everybody in Minnesota. I know you've heard all the numbers, so I just want to take you back 1 year to a story that I shared with a student teacher. When I have student teachers, one of the things I do with them is pull the contract out so they can look at a contract, familiarize them with the contract. And it was right during legislation, I thought, I'm going to wait until whatever pension reform happens so I don't have to tell her that she's retiring at 66. So we sat down after legislation and, you know, we worked through the contract. I just point out the important, not the important stuff, but the stuff to be aware of when she enters a contract. You know, number of days, your health care benefits, any personal PTO. Get to the salary schedule and show her how it works. And this young lady was probably my best student teacher I've ever had. She was a graduate student, leaving a private college with, you know, a lot of debt. And I showed her where she's going to start in the schedule and let her know your hourly rate is going to be about $29 an hour because you're graduating with a master's. And she kind of went, oh. I'm like, yep. And then we went through some more. And I said, you also going to want to look at retirement. You're going to retire when you're 65. And she looked at me and said, 65? I'm like, yep, 65. And I could just see her face drop. And she was one of the best student teachers I've had in my 28 years. I probably have had maybe a dozen. And for her to do that made me think, where are we heading? And I'm sure my one conversation last spring was one of many across the state with, you know, with college and pre-teaching candidates. So that's all the only story that I have, but I want to thank you. And as Jim Olson said, what can we do to help?
Thank you for your comments. And then our last testifier, if you could come up and
identify yourself and then begin.
Madam Chair, my name is Mike Ledoux. I'm president of the Troopers Association. Normally I'd have a nice speech or something prepared. I wasn't sure I was going to get the opportunity. I want to thank you for giving me that opportunity. I want to start out by personally thanking you for adding that amendment last year that made total and permanent disability a much higher percentage. Hopefully we never need it, but as you're probably aware, assaults on law enforcement have dramatically increased. So if that particular benefit is needed, I hope it isn't, of course. But I also want to thank you for your ongoing work, having had the privilege of getting to know you and many members of this committee. It's a very important committee that really I've been impressed how uniquely you all work together to solve these issues. Like my colleagues behind me in the teaching profession, we're struggling to recruit law enforcement officers. I'm sad to report we had a total of 59 applicants for our traditional law enforcement program that we have every year at Camp Ripley. To put that in perspective, when I started 29 years ago, we had 1,200 applicants. So the pension and the things that go along with it are crucial. I'm worried with the upcoming retirements we're facing, like you and I have discussed before, that we're going to really start to face a crisis. So anything that we can do to improve the pension, to improve the benefits packages available to our folks that decide to serve, I think it's crucial. I want to speak to the same issue Brian Rice spoke to, even though I'm not a retiree, someday I will be. The fact that the retirees COLA has been frozen at 1% is just not keeping up with inflation for those men and women that stepped up to serve their communities, and I think it's something that we need to look at. Speaking to the MSRS plan, all other plans within MSRS are currently at 1.5%. The corrections plan and the judges plan have a funding ratio that's below the state patrol plan, yet we are still at 1%. I've also spoken before on the fact that state law enforcement officers have a pension contribution rate of 15.4%, whereas my colleagues in para have a contribution rate of 11.8%. I don't know if I'll see it in my career, but I'd like to see that equity fixed at some point. Unfortunately, that's used against us when it comes to recruitment, the fact that you're paying that additional 3.6% to the pension. But I thank you for the opportunity. Thank you for coming to my hometown. I'm a fourth generation officer. Three generations of my family served this community, starting with my great grandfather in 1923. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, and thank you for your service. We have just about 10 minutes left, and I would like to actually have Representative Mary Murphy is here today, and she was the prior chair and had been on pensions for a really long time, did an enormous amount of work, and I'd like to just let Mary Murphy, Representative Mary Murphy, say a couple of words, and then some of our members have a couple of thoughts that they might want to share with all of you as well. So, Mary, if you're ready, if you could come up.
Thank you very much. You've heard it. And times are changing. I remember getting letters from individuals that were retired and lived too long because it did not keep up with the cost of living. 104 years old, 98 years old, 99 years old, and they just couldn't make it until a COLA came in, a new COLA could come in. We get letters, we get individual bills by representatives and senators, but we need to change the way the system is operated in the structure. I don't know if it's the Department of Administration's problem or the Department of Revenue's problem, but it's more than the governor's problem. It's more than the commissioner's problem, and it's more than any representative or senator deserves. We need more money up front, year after year after year after year. And then the plan directors and the plans would have some idea that there's more money than what is being asked for in the bill. And I can go on and rant, but you've heard it all before. Because I said it for over 20 years. Keep that in mind, and keep in mind everything that was said tonight, because it's all true. And people that work for the state of Minnesota, no matter what plan they're in for their pensions, the pension directors, the Board of Investments, all affect the individual things that were said. And we can't be reacting any longer. We have to have a basic sum of money in the governor's proposals or in the state proposals of what the expenses are. Not based on a guess of how many people are going to retire this year or not. And will we have money? It's a big problem. And the commission, the LCPR commission, can't do it by themselves. And we need more money from the general fund, a lot of pensions, for every single department of the state, the county, the community school boards, the city employees, across township officers, across the state. The plans have to rely on more money than what they earn in the Board of Investments. So we have to think of a bigger plan. And thank you so much for coming. Because Brian Rice was right, we haven't done this before. And so we don't know how people are hurting. And we don't know how many public employees were turning away before they even had a chance to consider. And that's not the number one state in the country. We should be. We are Minnesota. And we are communities. So let's go.
Thank you, Mary. And thank you for all of you. Members, if you have one of the remarks, if you just want to raise your hand, I can write down the list. And
Thank you all so much for joining us today. I actually am originally from Hibbing and spent some of my childhood in Duluth, so it's great to be up here again. I wasn't in the legislature when the Rule of 90 was adopted, but my recollection is the reason was kind of selfishly, we had a surplus of teachers and we wanted to open the profession for younger teachers to enter it. And so it was a way to both allow people to retire with a great pension, but open up the door for younger teachers. That's not the case right now. We have a shortage of teachers, so it kind of freaks me out at the idea of all of you wonderful teachers wanting to leave us and retire. What are we going to do? However, the argument you make about recruitment is really very compelling because we really need to ramp up the recruitment efforts and, you know, encourage in more young people through a variety of methods to enter the profession and then stay a fair amount of time. You know, not until you're totally burnt out, but a fair amount of time. And I think that the argument about better benefits, they have a pension to look forward to, help with retiring debt, I mean, whatever we can do to ennoble, it's always been a great profession. I think teachers have taken a lot of, I can't think of a non, offensive word to use. It starts with S and ends in T, or it starts with C and ends with P, from the public. And, and it can be, it's a very challenging job. I know I taught college classes for 20 years, and that was it for me. I mean, I can understand how it can be hard to reach your 40 years of teaching. So I applaud you all. I think we do need to work on trying to find a solution to this that's equitable, as you talked about. And I pledge to do that. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Seaver.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I am delighted to be in Duluth. It's one of my favorite towns. I lived here for about 10 years. I went to college here. And my friend Cheryl, who's in the audience here, we were roommates. We've known each other for about 34 years. Mm-hmm. And when we graduated from college, she went into teaching, I went into law. And I know how hard she works. I know that she gives her soul to the profession. I also know that teachers are not paid what they deserve, and they work longer hours than I think anybody realizes. I went into teaching in my 40s. I went and I got a master's in teaching and was in the classroom working as an English teacher. Cheryl was my mentor. She talked me through it. She talked me off the ledge a few times and kept me in the classroom. And I want to say it's the best job I've ever had, but it is the hardest I've ever worked at anything in my entire life. The kids are worth it. The students are worth it. So to all you teachers that are here, I see you, and I know how hard you work, and I know why you're in this profession, because it's not for the pay, and it's not for the public respect. It's for the kids. I'm hearing what you're saying. The pension problem needs to be fixed. I don't know how we do that. We got historic funding this session. It was only $600 million, and it's a drop in the bucket for what needs to go into the fund so that you guys all get the retirement that you deserve. I'm going to keep working on this. These are hard problems. I'm an English teacher, not an actuarial or a math teacher, but I will do my best to dive into what needs to be done, and you've got my commitment to continue working on this problem.
Thank you, Senator Seaver. And Representative Burke.
Thank you. One of the guiding principles in the labor movement is having dignity at work, as well as solidarity, which means we lift everyone up. But that dignity in the workplace extends to retirement. And what I'm hearing from a variety of different union members and a variety of different professions is that dignity simply isn't there. And that's not okay. And it's never going to be okay. Like Senator Seaberger said, I don't know what the answer is. I barely understand what's happening on any given day in the Pension Commission. But I know what you deserve. And that's why you have my commitment to continue working hard on the issues that you brought forward today. You have no bigger advocate or more passionate advocate in Chair Herr. It's an honor to work with her, an extremely good choice by our speaker to have her chair this committee. She has my full confidence that we will work on your issues, and I hope you have that confidence too. Thank you.
Thank you, members. And anybody else? I just wanted to say a couple of really quick comments, too. I know, I don't know if I've shared this in pensions or when I was in the Education Committee, but I came to this country as a refugee, and so English is not my first language. And I remember struggling going through school, and I almost failed the second grade. I probably, with all the test indicators, I should never be where I am today. I think now as an adult, I've self-diagnosed myself with ADHD and dyslexia. But, really it was that my senior year in high school, I had a teacher who saw my potential. And she was like, you're so smart. Why are you so behind in reading and in math and everything? And I was going to go to college because as a refugee, there was no other option but to go to college because my parents really, as two people who were laborers, my father worked in the paper factory and then ended up being an entrepreneur. He has a pension as a pastor. And my parents worked really hard to get us to where we are. And I remember this teacher saying to me, she worked with me after school. And I literally taught me from the beginning again, basics, how to actually write a paper. And had I not had that teacher my senior year of high school, I could have never graduated college because I would have never had the writing skills to actually do the kind of rigorous writing in college. And I thought about her every single day, every time I struggled with something, years into my life, into my master's, into my doctorate. And about maybe 7 years ago, I looked her up to see where she was. And I called her up and I was like, Mrs. Rice, do you remember me? I told her everything about to see if I could jog her memory. She was like, I don't remember you. And I thought, how devastating that this person made such an impact on my life, and she didn't remember me at all. But I at first, and then I thought about that. I thought that this is actually the way it should be. That she must have helped so many students, that was just the way that she did her job. I wasn't an anomaly, that was what she was working with every day. And I just think, like, the fact that teachers show up and do that kind of work and you make changes and you impact people's lives in ways you will never know, and maybe you won't even remember them, but they will be who they are because of you. And I know that teaching is a thankless job sometimes, and we appreciate all that you've done. I have ideas of what I think the solution should be. I know that I've been advocating, even though we're not back in session yet, for ongoing funding. As many of you know, a lot of the things we could not do is because we have one-time money. And you know, we all want to be responsible stewards of public money, and that in order for us to make structural changes in pension plans, we need ongoing money. And so I am the author of the fifth care bill to increase funding to a dedicated revenue source for, and what I'd like to see happen in pensions. But you know, there are a lot of things we're putting out there, and so part of fixing problems is generating more revenue. And so know that we're committed to continue. And the speaker, I think you might, for those who you know follow her and some of the comments she's made, she did say that there were two committees that if she were not to put ongoing funding towards, I don't remember the other committee, but I know one of them was pensions. So matters to me, so the pensions was not there. So chair bonding. So bonding and pensions. So no. Yeah. All of you, when you're advocating, we encourage you loud and clear. We're continuing to work on this, and we are committed to continuing to find solutions. So thank you all so much for your time today and being here. And we look forward to ongoing engagement with all of you. Thank you.
Thank you.